Beverly, and I'm an addict. I need to first say that I'm extremely nervous. But I know that nothing's out of order. And I am an addict, and I am a member of Narcotics Anonymous. I first want to... I first want to thank South Potomac area for asking me to speak. And, you know, I've really been praying about this and asking God to use me as a vessel to speak. And that if I could help one person, then I've done my job. And I'm definitely an addict, you know. I live to use and use to live. And I just don't have to use anymore. Not any drugs, anyway. And when they told me what the topic was going to be, recovering from deep-rooted issues, you know, I had to really think about that. And I really know today that God works in my life, you know, and nothing is out of order, you know. And I thought about what deep-rooted issues meant to me. And the only way that I know that I have suffered from deep-rooted issues is I had to first get clean to know that. And then what I found out was that there were issues that I had that I struggled with. And one of the main ones that I know that affect me today is abandonment. My mother gave me up at birth, and I don't know who my father is. And so I grew up not knowing my parents. And I didn't know that until I was about 9. I was raised with a Spanish family, and I really didn't think anything was out of order because my foster dad was just as dark as I was. So that was the only connection that I could make. But it wasn't until my mom began to sign my homework that I noticed our last names differ. And I asked, you know, I would ask questions, and they would always avoid answering me until one day they told me the truth. And when they told me the truth, I internalized that as there was something wrong with me. I couldn't understand how my mother could have left me on somebody's doorstep, you know. There had to be something wrong with me. No woman leaves her baby. That's what I thought. And then as I grew up, and I grew up in an era where being dark-skinned wasn't cool. So I grew up not liking who I was. My friends teased me. They called me everything from midnight to spook juice, you know. And I wanted to be light-skinned with long hair. You know, I was tall. All my friends were short. I always had to be at the back of the class. And so I began to search for a place where I could fit in or be a part of. And the only place that I was able to find that was with drugs and alcohol and people who were using. When I got here to Narcotics Anonymous and y'all told me that I had to stop using, one of the first issues that I addressed was my abandonment by my moms. I was very angry. I felt like I didn't have what y'all had. I used to hate coming to meetings and listen to y'all share about y'all relationships with your parents, you know, because I didn't have that. And although I was raised with foster parents, but they weren't my real parents. You know, I had no idea who I looked like, you know, where my features come from, who do I favor. You know, if I had a brother or sister, they walked right past me and I wouldn't even know it. I was angry because I felt like I was deprived of something. And I would always leave the meeting because I really didn't want to hear what y'all was saying. But thank God for sponsorship. Thank God for step work. And what I found out was my mother did the best that she could. And through the help of the sponsor that I had at the time, she helped me to find some gratitude in all of that. It could have went the other way. My mother could have aborted me, and then I wouldn't be here. What y'all told me was that y'all would now be my family. And what I set out to do was to find mother figures, father figures. I never spent a Christmas, a Thanksgiving, a New Year's by myself. But that doesn't mean that I've totally recovered from that issue. I still struggle with that abandonment. When I get into relationships, be it friendship, at work, my own personal relationship, when I hold on for dear life because I'm so afraid that y'all will leave me. I could remember just times where I would get into an argument with a girlfriend and she'd hang up because she's just angry. She doesn't want to talk about it right now. And I'd be so afraid, I'd become obsessed and compulsed to the point where you got to hear what it is I got to say because I want to make it all right. You know what I'm saying? And as a result of my fear of abandonment or rejection, I done been to jail in here, y'all, because I couldn't accept the fact that at the time the relationship I was in was over. I didn't want to hurt. You know, I came in here and I wouldn't share with y'all what was going on with me. So I'd sit in the meeting and then I'd get up and I'd leave feeling the same old way. You know, it got to the point where I had to do something with them feelings. And intellectually, I knew I couldn't use. So I act out, kicking doors in, tree boxing. If anybody don't know what tree boxing is, this is when you're creeping and all that, you know. And you know what's funny about that? You're always thinking that you do something when nobody knows what you're doing. At least that's what I thought. Nobody knew because I wasn't doing it inside the rooms. But people saw me, you know. And basically, I was using without actually picking up the drug. I remember being in a meeting one particular morning and sharing to help the newcomer, you know. I ain't tell him that weekend I had just kicked in the door, right? And the police came up in the meeting, y'all. Now, I seen police come in the meeting before. And I said, well, so they must be coming up in here. They looking for somebody. And I'm still sharing, you know. Then I say, thank y'all for letting me share. And I was at a particular club, and the manager walked over to me and said, Beverly, you need to step outside. The police are here for you. And I looked, and he said, we don't want to make a scene. You know, so I got outside and they saw you, Beverly Sellers, and I said yes, and they said you under arrest. And the humiliation of them pulling my shoestrings out of my tennis shoes in front of the club, you know, and everybody's saying, what's going on? She ain't did nothing. She, you know, I knew what I had did, you know, and I got in the car and that was my first experience ever being locked up. You know, never been locked up while I was using coming in recovery 5 years clean and go to jail. But that's not the kicker. That was only one time. I had to go back two more times because my thinking told me because I refused to let go because I was so afraid of being with me, you know, that I was determined he was going to change his mind, you know, and I set out. I said I did it wrong that time. I need to do it different this time, you know, and I'm going to tell you how God worked in my life. And, you know, I just want to say, Ms. Barb, I love you dearly. I remember standing outside, I'm talking about in the midst of rage and anger, and really, I know today that all that's masked by fear. But I'm standing outside and in a fit rage, you know, and God sent my sponsor down the street and another individual down the street, and they came out the car and tried to calm me down, but I refused. I just did not want to hurt. I didn't really want to take a look at Beverly. I was so fearful of being alone because, and for me, it's just it's an ongoing process. That's an issue for me that's deep rooted. You know, I've been able to come in here and overcome some other things, stealing, you know, tricking, you know, lying, and all that other kind of stuff that doesn't sit so deep. But that's one for me that I know that I probably will work on for the rest of my life, you know. And what I need to do is to keep coming in the rooms and sharing this part of me with y'all, you know, that I'm so afraid of being alone, you know. And it got to the point where I was forced, you know. God stripped me. 5 years, he stripped me of everything. You know, I had the full furnished apartment and everything. And I came home one day, and all my stuff was trashed in the dumpster, you know. And the only thing that I could do was take some stuff and stick it in a bag and go to a meeting. And I raised my hand, and I shared. I was forced to go back to, and I'm sure I was forced to go to an Oxford House. And here I am, 5 years clean. And, you know, I done worked a couple of steps, did 4th, 5th, you know, thinking that I've worked on some stuff. And I walked up, moved into this house. And, you know, the most important thing to me at that time was that these newcomers accepted me. They were intimidated by my time. So they backed away from me. And I would come to the meeting and I would cry. And people would look at me and say, Beverly, you got 5 years. It didn't matter. I wanted to be accepted. I wanted to be loved. You know, that's all that I knew, and I could not understand why these women was not accepting Beverly. I know the day that I am a child of God, right? And I truly believe that he has a purpose for me, and I don't know what it is. I just try to pray every morning and ask him to give me the strength and the courage to do his will. And then I know that that I'm not alone, you know. I'm in therapy today. I'm one of the ones that needs help outside of these rooms. And I'm all right with that today. You know, I'm able to talk about my insecurities, you know, my lack of trust. And all I know to say is this, is that I really try real hard of not being judgmental of other people, because I don't know how deep one's issues may run. And I could remember coming in here and talking about the newcomer woman who may come in here with her pants real tight or her skirt real short, and then whispering to my buddy, why she dressed like that? You know, instead of, you know, walking to her, you know, and talking to her, that maybe that's all she knows. I don't know where she comes from. I don't know what her issues are. You know what I'm saying? I truly believe that, and I did this for a very long time, I truly believe that the only thing that I had to offer a man was what was between my legs. That's all that I knew. I didn't think there was nothing else. You know, I came in here and I watched all my friends get married, find husbands and get married, and I wondered what was wrong with me. You know what I'm saying? This, I'm going on 9 years, and I'm just getting ready to get married next year, if it's God's will. But I had to wait. It just wasn't my time. You know what I'm saying? And so I don't know what everybody else's deep. I know what mine's is, and all I know is that if I see someone struggling with a particular issue, the best thing that I could do is to try to tell them to just don't use. To keep coming, to keep talking about it and sharing it with somebody. You know, because I just thank God. I thank God for a group of women. God placed a group of women in my life last year, you know, where I really thought that, you know, when the pain is so deep, you know what I'm saying, and you're laying in the bed. I'm talking about the pain that hit your back. You know what I'm saying? And you're just rocking. And I'm wondering how I'm going to make it to the next day. You know what I'm saying? Just concentrating on not using. God placed a group of women in my life. I don't know where they came from. I shared at a meeting one day, and then I went and attended another meeting, and they remember what I shared. And they walked up to me and they said, how you doing with that situation? And I was like, what situation? And they said, I heard you share. And little did they, I was still going through. And they grabbed me. And next thing I know was many late nights drinking coffee, sitting there crying, angry, arguing. I mean, getting in the car, just, you know, helping me to get outside myself, keeping me out of jail, y'all. Because that's how I go when I go. That's how deep it runs for me. All I know to do is to do whatever because I don't want to hurt. And I just thank God for those women. You know, they helped me. All I know is that Narcotics Anonymous is the best thing that happened to an addict like me. I really don't know where I'd be if it wasn't for this program, for the people in it. And I know this, that all the things that I ever wanted in my life, I'm getting it. And this is just for me, you know, I kept wanting to fill that void with everything else but what I needed to fill it with. And that, you know, I used to hear people say it in the meetings, and I would repeat it because it sounded real cool and everything. But you know what? I really know what that means. You know, every time I placed something or a person or something material, he'd remove it. And he said, Beverly, I will give you what you want, but I want you first. And I could not trust because I couldn't see. I was afraid. I wasn't sure what was on the other side. And he said, if you just let go and place me in your life first, I'll give you what you want. And I say, okay, I'm not ready yet. And I go and I get another. And then I believe my God has a sense of humor. He said, okay, you like relationships, huh? And I'm this type of person. I get the newcomer. You know what I'm saying? And I'm here to report that there's a price to pay for that. If you don't think that there isn't, there is. There's a price to pay for that. And he said, so you like relationships, huh? And you want to mess with newcomers, huh? I'm going to get your attention whether you want it or not. So he placed an individual in my life, a newcomer. And we became friends. And then it was a relationship. And then, you know, once I get involved, we get married. You know how that go. Well, anyway, I realized today, and I didn't realize this till later on, but he lived in the Knoxville house, and I got a big old nice apartment, you know, and I'm over here in the Knoxville house in this little one bedroom room, you know, having this relationship, right? And he woke up one morning and invited me to his church. Now, I need to say this because this is just my story, and you know, this is not a prerequisite for Narcotics Anonymous, but this is my story. And I told him, no, I am never stepping foot in church again. You know, only time you see me up in the church is this in a meeting. So he said, well, Beverly, just come. You know, if you don't like it, you ain't never got to come back. So I said, okay, fine. And I went. And I walked through the doors, and I've never stopped going since. Not only am I a member of the church, but I'm a Eucharistic minister, right? And in the faith that I'm in, that's like really kind of up there. But I never thought. And once I began to place him first, you know what I'm saying, then all of a sudden everything just seemed to work out. And the kicker was, right after all of that, he passed away. And we talk about one more time, abandonment. But it was a different type of feeling this time. Yeah, I heard it. You know, I suffered a loss, but I was grateful because before he left, he gave me the one gift that I could not get on my own, and that was my relationship with the God of my understanding. And I believe that God placed him in my life just for that purpose. And once he did that, and I am forever grateful. So that's my story. And I am glad to be here, and I will definitely keep coming back.
I'm Kenan, and I'm an addict. I'd like to thank Beverly for speaking, and our next speaker will be Carl.
Hi, everybody. My name's Carl. I'm an addict.
Hey, Carl.
And it's good to be here. I have one announcement. There's about 60, 70, maybe 80 people too many in this room, and I'd like for about that many to leave right now because the fire marshal is watching, and it wasn't quite this crowded when I came in. My last experience at sharing at a convention was down in Florida about 2 months ago, and I was supposed to share on a topic Saturday morning at 8 or 8:30, and I got to the room, and the other speaker was there, and the people doing the taping showed up, but nobody was there. Me and the other speaker sat around, and we talked for 15 or 20 minutes, and he said, "Well, do you want to do the meeting?" I said, "Well, you're in this area." I said, "It's sort of up to you. I'll do whatever you want to do." We sat there and we talked and talked and talked and talked. And we had a meeting of our own, but we didn't tape it. And on the inside, I felt sort of down, rejected. Like they knew I was coming and they didn't show up. They didn't roll out the red carpet. Maybe somebody forgot to print up the flyers and said I was coming all the way from this area to go to Florida or something. And that was my self-centeredness getting in the way. When they first gave me this topic, I called my sponsor because I was confused on what in the world am I going to talk about? Because I told him, I said, I don't really have any deep-rooted issues. Thank God for sponsors. And I need to say this. I really don't want to be here right now. One of my sponsees is over in the other room sharing, and I really wanted to be there and listen to him because this is his first convention sharing. And I'll buy the tape, but that's not the same as being there to support him the first time. So my heart is really over there. So when I called him and I told him what the topic was, he told me to keep coming back, and we stayed on the phone for a while. And by the time I got off the phone with him that evening, I knew what to talk about. Thank God for sponsors. Because he's been guiding me since I've been here. He gave me a range of different things that I've been dealing with since I've been working with him. The biggest one is denial. That's why I couldn't get clean in the beginning. Before I even got here, I was dealing with denial. It really wasn't that bad. I lost a job. I worked for Metro way back in the 70s. And I went to treatment. This was early 70s. Went to treatment. Came back from treatment. Turned in the little doctor slip that you got to turn in to go back to work. And I was put on probation. They said I had to stay clean for a year. And they could drug test me at any time that they wanted. And I said, okay, not knowing that I wasn't going to stay clean. I mean, that was the first week out of treatment. And I thought that I had found a new way of life. I didn't plan on going to any meetings. I didn't plan on stopping drinking. I didn't really plan on stop using. I just figured I'd do it different for real. And what ended up happening was that was in November. In April of the next year, I was in a car accident. And I had to take some time off of work from the car accident. I went back to medical to get released to go back to work. And they wanted me to give them a urine. And I'm thinking to myself, I went out because my neck was sore. Why do you want me to pee in a cup? And the purpose was because they knew I was using. And I went back to work, and I worked maybe 3 days, maybe four, and they called me back down to headquarters, and I had lost that job. Within a week, maybe 7, 8, 9 days, I had found another job in the field I was in. And I made 10 or 11 cents more an hour, and I didn't work weekends. So my justification was, it really ain't that bad. You know, I got the weekends off. I ain't working midnights no more. I ain't having to wear them green uniforms, and I ain't getting dirty. So it really ain't that bad. And in the back of my mind, I told myself I can keep using. So denial runs real deep for me. That continued. I stayed on several different methadone programs up until the end. When I got to treatment the last time, I was on what I hoped was methadone for the 25th and last time that I was on it. And my life was a wreck, emotional, spiritual, financial, physical. I was a complete wreck. But if you ask me, I was doing all right. You know, I was just doing all right. It really wasn't quite that bad, if you ask me, because, again, I was still in denial. I managed to get to treatment that last time, and I really, really, really want to thank everybody at the end of the meeting when we take the moment of silence for the addict that still suffers. Maybe y'all ought to think about the fact that that's what prayed me up in here. And I take that moment of silence real serious because that's what got me here. And if I ever go and use again, that moment of silence that y'all take may be what gets me back. So when I take that moment of silence, it's a serious thing for me. Right? God delivered me from the gutter and brought me here. I didn't come from a high bottom. I didn't have a whole lot of not yet. I came from the gutter. And I never, ever, ever want to forget how bad it was. If I was to turn my back on God after he delivered me to this spiritual program, there'd be a smack in his face. I heard at a convention, it was here, 3 years ago, the main speaker said that there was two gifts that he got when he got to this program. The first gift he got was he got delivered just by getting here. The second gift he received was he stayed around long enough to realize that he got the first gift. I had been here for 5 years. I had listened to that tape over and over, and I did not understand that. It went over my head. Today, I got a whole lot of gratitude, a whole lot of gratitude just for not using. Now, in a lot of other areas of my life, I am trying to do some things and get better. I try to work the steps. I try to practice this program to the best of my ability in all areas of my life. There are a lot of things that I fall short in. I'm not a saint. I don't profess to be. I don't think anybody else in here is either. And I got a lot of areas of shortcomings. The thing that my sponsor and I talked about the most was, why am I afraid to let y'all know who I am? Why am I afraid? Why won't I tell you? Why won't I tell you about some of the issues that go on inside of here that I can share freely and openly with him? but I won't come in a meeting and share. He told me this was an opportunity to free myself. That's what he told me. I'm in the midst of a storm. Been there for a while. My wife and I've been separated for a year. Been married for 27 years. Got clean together, stayed married for seven and a half years in recovery, and then separated. And in the midst of the madness right now. We've been separated for a year. We live in different places. And that's a struggle. That's a real, real struggle. Because for real, I really want it to be over on the inside. But the past keeps pulling on me and saying, it really ain't got to be over. It really ain't got to be over. Hold on. And I don't know what to do. And it's real hard for me to make a decision. So most of the days, what I do is I straddle the fence rather than make a decision. I got 1 foot in and 1 foot out of the door most of the time. And I can't keep going through life like that. It ain't real easy. So right now, what that does for me is it makes my life an emotional wreck. That's what it does. And because my wife is in recovery, what I refuse to do is come in here and share about it. Right? So what I get is I get bottled all up on the inside, and I end up feeling bad. I go to a meeting feeling bad and leave feeling bad. And that ain't what these rooms are for. You know? Now, I'm not here to bash my wife. Please, don't anybody take this the wrong way. I am not saying anything bad about her or anything negative. I am talking strictly about Carl. That's who I'm talking about. If y'all hear something different, that's what y'all hear. Okay? That's on y'all. I live for a rush. I did that while I was using. I got a dream right now. Now, this will let y'all know how I think. And then y'all can go from there. There's a movie that I watched the other day. It's called Point Break. At the end of the movie, there's a good guy and a bad guy on a plane. They got one parachute. The bad guy jumps out with the parachute, and the police, who's trying to catch him, he's an FBI guy. He's got a gun, but no parachute. Okay? Gun, no parachute. The other guy done jumped already. So he jumps out of the plane with no parachute. In the middle of the air, he lands on top of the guy with the parachute. They wrestled around, and he's telling them, you can't pull the ripcord unless you let the gun go. And he don't want to let the gun go. And right towards the end, he's got to let it go to pull the cord. My goal is to jump out of a plane without a parachute. Now, y'all may think that's crazy, but I live for the rush. I do. Now, I said all that to say that my thinking ain't always clear. That's why I shared that. Somebody may be able to talk me out of that somewhere down the line. I'm not planning on doing that today or tomorrow. Right? I do plan on jumping on Sunday on the way home, but I'm not going to jump without a shoot. Sunday I'm going to have a shoot on. And I do jump. And it's a lot of fun. I've done that since I've gotten clean. The gift that this program, that this new way of life has given me is awesome. I could not begin to even go over some of the freedoms that I've been blessed with. I have freedom of choice. That's the biggest thing that I have. While I was using, that was not one of the things that I was entitled to, because drugs ruled my life. It ruled my thinking. It ruled my choices. who ruled the way I lived. I didn't like that very much. I didn't like who I was on the inside from the time I was a kid. I didn't like the fact when I went to school, a lot of the kids where I went to school came from single parent households. And I was ashamed of the fact that I had two parents. Now, figure that one out. So I wanted to go to school and lie and say I didn't have a father. I didn't want to tell the kids, the other kids in school, when we would come back from the summer, that we had gone on vacation. Because most of the other kids in the school that I went to didn't do that for the summer. My father worked two jobs and would save all year round. He would neglect us as far as spending time with us sometimes so he could be a good provider on one hand, and we would get to do some of the things that what you would call normal people do, go on vacations and see some things, but I was ashamed of doing those things. And I wanted to live I would have rather grown up in the projects poor. I mean, that's where my thinking was, because that's where other people were. I just wanted to be like other people. That's all I wanted. I just wanted to be accepted from the time I was a kid all the way through adulthood, even since I've been here. You know, I had to find my little niche when I got clean. What is it going to take for me to get accepted, like Beverly talked about? With 5 years clean, she had to find a little niche in the recovery house. What's it going to take for me to find my little niche in here? You know, will they like me? You know, there are things that I do today on a professional side that I refuse to share about because some people take it the wrong way. And it's not that I'm bragging. I've just been blessed with an awful lot. I truly have. I get an opportunity to do a lot of things and meet a lot of people and go a lot of places. And I don't share about those things because a lot of times people take it the wrong way. It's like I'm bragging, and I'm really not. Because if it hadn't been for this program and you wonderful people, none of these things would be possible. I'd still be standing on the corner selling AA and AAA batteries like I did at the end of my story. That's all I was doing. Hoping that somebody needed some energizers to put in a goddamn toy someplace. You know, some lotion or some toothpaste. Something that I had stolen from CVS that I could get a dollar for. That's all I wanted, was to be accepted. That's it. You know, this new way, you know, there are things that even in here, while I was married, there were times where, because my wife and I weren't communicating, she'd be in the bedroom, and she may be horny. I'd be in the other room playing with myself because I wouldn't tell her how I was feeling, and she wouldn't tell me how she was feeling. Lack of communication. You know? That's the shit people won't... That's the shit I won't talk about. I ain't talking about other people. That's the shit I won't talk about. You know? And I heard this girl the other day share... Try masturbating and talking to God at the same time. The two of them don't work. So if you got a problem masturbating and you want to stop, that's a good, real good way to try to stop right there. Now, if you don't want to stop, you may not want to try that. If you're having fun doing it, don't try that. But if you really, really, I mean, if you're really trying to stop, you know, when I shared that with my sponsor, right, I thought something was wrong with me. I really did. My sponsor said he started doing that when he was 12 years old. I said, damn, I started about the same time. And it's not a big deal. You know, I'm not the only one. It's nothing for me to be ashamed about. I have not heard anything that I have done that I could come in here and share about that somebody somewhere down the line hasn't done the same thing. Nothing. Nothing. So I don't have issues that other people haven't been through. It may not be you or you or you or anybody in this room, but somebody in some room, someplace, has been through the same thing I've been through somewhere. And if I keep sharing about it, I'll find them. You know, that's how we identify with other people, is through our common stories and our common bonds and sharing. I just want to get better. That's what I want to do. I want to be comfortable in my skin, being Carl. That's what I want to do. I really want to be comfortable being who I am. I have some opportunities coming up that are mind-blowing as far as career change and some other things. I also suffer with, in addition to low self-esteem sometimes, I still suffer with that. But in addition to that, I still suffer with migraine headaches. And the migraine headaches that I suffer with have been very debilitating. I've been out of work for a year. The migraine headaches have brought on a severe case of depression. Between the two of them, they sent me home from work April the 28th of last year. And I tried to go back in November, and I worked 3 weeks then, and they sent me back home again. My job terminates me on the 11th of May. My original plan, remember, this is the same guy that's going to jump out the plane now without the chute. So I had a plan. My original plan was I had planned on talking to the doctor and to let me go back to work, only to be sent home one more time so that they would put me on a permanent disability status. And after talking to my therapist earlier this week, and I do have a therapist, and that's something that I never thought I'd stand in front of a room of people and say, but yes, I too have a therapist, and I'll say it again, and she's very good. She told me that that was being deceitful. And she asked me, did I want to continue going through life like that? I wanted to smack her. But I had to remember that I had to pay for that too. And I made a decision that I didn't want to do that anymore. I don't want to continue to be deceitful. That's one of those character defects that I suffer with that I'm trying to get better with. I mean, I pray that the things that I suffer with go away. And when I recognize them, that's an opportunity for me to make a choice. That's what I get every day. I get an opportunity to make a choice. She told me, it's a woman that's probably never been to a meeting before in her life, but she, because she's in the field that she's in, she understands about recovery. She told me, she said, every time that I get an opportunity to make a decision, there's something inside of me that tells me the right thing and the wrong thing to do. And if I start listening to it a little bit more often, the decisions that I have to make will become a little bit more easy. That sounds like something my sponsor would tell me. It really does. So I'm going to take that with me. And when it's time for me to start making decisions, like driving up here, my sponsor and I, we followed each other. And I know that the state police know when our convention is. Make no mistake about it. They know when our convention is. They also know that a lot of us have not cleaned up all of the wreckage of our past. And if they pull one or two of us over and have the opportunity to help us clean up the wreckage of our past, they have had a good day. I have seen it happen. So it is in my best interest to obey the speed limit on the way up here. That's not something to talk about. That's something to do. And when my foot wants to get a little heavy on the pedal, right, I have to remember the wreckage of my past. Do I want another ticket? No, I really don't. I really don't. I'm going to close by saying that we all have issues from the past. We all know what our issues are. Some of us may not be ready to deal with them yet. Some of these issues will be lifelong issues that it takes us a lifetime to deal with. Some of them will be issues that we deal with on an individual basis with our sponsor. Some of them will be issues that we deal with a therapist. Some of them may be issues that we never get to. The most important thing that I need to remember is that nothing that comes up from the past is important enough to make me use. Nothing is important enough to make me use. They told me in treatment. I got shivers in me because they lied to me in treatment. They told me in treatment there wasn't but two people in treatment going to make it, and there's three of us in this goddamn room right now. So they lied to me. They lied. They lied. They told me if my ass fell off to pick it up and take it to a meeting. They told me if my house blew down to start building another one. They told me if my mama died to bury her, take her flowers, and remember her. They told me nothing was enough to make me use to go back to the life that I was leading. And I need to remember that on a daily basis. I thank God for these rooms. I thank God for you people. I thank God for this convention. Thank y'all for listening.
I'd like to thank both of our speakers. We have 15 minutes. Would anybody like to come up and share? Can you leave quietly because the meeting's still going on?
I'm Tyrone. I'm Natty.
Hey, Tyrone.
I'm also in service. And I had to steal away to get me a meeting. I saw it deep rooted, and I thought about some of my issues and something was going on with me. And I said, I'm going to go to this meeting. And if I don't make no more meetings Friday, I'm going to go to this one meeting. And it's been a beautiful meeting. Beverly, I love you. Thanks for sharing. Carl, you're part of my network. I love you. Thanks for sharing. I guess we're more liked than different. My thing was I had those skeletons in the closet, and it was real important for me not to let nobody know about them. But they said you were sick as your secrets. So eventually the skeletons got to a point where I had to talk about it, or I acted out on it. And I have to always remember I suffer from a feeling disease, and if I feel bad, I'll use my feelings. I don't know about abandonment issues. I never had a dad. My mom was my mom and my dad. I think my children suffer from abandonment issues because I never was there with my children. I was always using. I have 10 girls and 5 boys. And the children have problems with abandonment issues and me not being there, from the oldest to the youngest. And I can't let nobody hold me hostage over the past. The past is like my ass, it's all behind me. I got to deal with right now. And right now I'm trying to make this thing one day at a time. I love y'all. Thanks for letting me share.
Just for the day, also. Come up, read just for the day, Valerie.